My granddad used to leave his false teeth in a glass.
Yeah, my grandmother did that too.
By the sink, the kitchen sink, and me and my sister, my granddad used to go to bed really early, like 6 p.m. So when we used to stay around there, me and my sister used to take one set each, put them in our mouths, and pretend we were our granddad. Absolutely gross. Looking back, it's vomit inducing.
Absolutely gross. Yeah, just like, oh my gosh. Yeah.
At the time, we thought we were hilarious. Hello and welcome once again to the Pro Wrestling Post podcast with myself, Mark Blake, and my buddy from across the pond, Mark Madison. How are you doing, fella?
I am doing super on this Friday as we record. Calm, relaxed, but probably not as good as you with what's in your head at this moment.
Yeah, a friend of mine, or a friend of my wife's, told me about Bailey's. I don't know if you do have Bailey's over there, don't you? Bailey's Irish Cream?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So every now and again, they will produce some special editions. There was an Eton Mess one, which was lovely. There was a Pina Colada one, which was absolutely gorgeous. And she basically found a mint choc chip one and told me it tastes like an alcoholic mint choc chip ice cream. So I was like, oh, okay. So I'd finished work early today. I went to the supermarket, picked up a few bits and bobs, and oh no, a bottle of mint choc chip Baileys is falling in my basket. Oh no, I best pay for it. So I bought it. I brought it home, and I've cracked it open, and it is absolutely gorgeous. And I'm on my second glass already. It is 6:30 in the evening. This could be a very...
And as the saying goes...
Go on, sorry.
Go.
No, you crack on.
No, you're saying, I was going to say, I mean, just proof that it is 5 o'clock somewhere, as the saying tends to go. So in your case, it's after six. So
the this could be a half drunk podcast by the end of this record. We'll have to wait and see. But it is going down super nice and super smooth. So if anyone out there really likes mint choc chip ice cream and Bailey's, oh, get it. £17 in Iceland, not Iceland. Where was it? Tesco's. Yes. For all us Brits over here, Tesco's. What about you? Have you on the alcohol yet? I mean, I know it's 1:30 over there, but...
Unfortunately, I have a couple of kids that are going to be picking up off a bus in a couple hours, and so probably I don't want, like, my parental duties to come into question if that's happening. So, unfortunately, I'm going to have to wait, possibly as I watch SmackDown this evening, to enjoy something. Possibly variations of Bailey's. I might take advantage of that. I think you've inspired that. I think I'm already committed to the cause.
Yes. Get that Bailey's down your neck, mate. Come on.
We'll do.
There is also another reason why the alcohol was broken, or been broken, I should say, over here. Been broken? What the hell am I on about? Why I'm drinking? See, two glasses. Bloody hell, what's wrong with me? Way back when we came back, we discussed about... how this was going to be a bit of a different podcast. How, yes, there would be some kind of structure, but it will be basically two dudes in a bar having a beer, talking wrestling. I've cracked open the alcohol. I've told Mark, mate, let's just forget the run sheet. Not that we had one to begin with. We had a rough idea. And let's just talk about just random topics that pop into our head, which hopefully all of you lovely listeners will find great, great listening and, you know, topics that you'd want to follow and just join in, maybe. We spoke literally late last night, possibly about doing this, and then about an hour ago, it was like, yeah, we're definitely going to do it because I'm on the Baileys. And here we are. We are in our metaphorical bar, propping it up. I'm actually I'm sat on my office chair, and I'm leaning on the desk like I would be if I was at a bar. With my glass right beside me, and I'm going to talk to my bud about anything and everything to do with wrestling. We did come up with a starting topic, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. I hope you you're ready to share. Like we see, we in talking about the back and forth and what we would do, we did walk into this one conversation as we're both sitting. What is your beer of choice? Let's say it's a beer of choice right now. Because right now, yes, it's Bailey's, but if you were to have something, what would it be right now?
I've got many. It depends on what kind of mood I'm in. At the moment, over here in the UK, we have a little bit of a mini heat wave. So I would be on the ciders. There's a rhubarb cider, which I've really got into, and I can't remember who makes it. But oh my God, it's absolutely gorgeous and very dangerous because they go down like water, and all of a sudden you've had six and you get up to go to the toilet and you're very wobbly. So but right now that would be that. What about you? What about you in the nice warmth, which you will be getting soon, I'm sure.
Yes, but, the weather's been pretty good, actually. It's been pretty mild here as it is. Typically we're in a snow belt where snow hits in parts where it shouldn't, or times when everybody else is typically milder. So thankfully that's kind of passed us by right now. But what I would say is if I had a beverage right now, it'd probably be a Rickard's Red. That tends to be something I, as a fall tried and true right now, as I go into the weekend. Nice. And I'm going to sit with a pint of that. I'll send a screenshot at some point of what mine would have looked like, and we can call back to say, hey, this is what we're doing as we're drinking it. So unfortunately right now I have a extra large McDonald's coffee product placement, and putting that out there, just saying, I think sponsorship isn't a bad thing, and enjoying that right now at this moment. But if there was a beer, it would be the Rickard's right now. So
excellent. So now we've got the alcohol done and sorted and in our hands, or metaphorically in your case, let's crack on. We did speak very, 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 very quickly about how we're going to start this. Let's start as we mean to go on. What is your Mount Rushmore of wrestlers? Have you thought about it?
I had to think about it on my drive home from work today, because that was what was on my mind. And when you talk about this, because it's always a popular topic, everybody's Mount Rushmore tends to have guys that are either tried and true and ones that would always exist. But mine isn't about bankability. Mine isn't about who sold the most seats, or who was the most over, or who put whom over, who's the most giving, whatever. Mine really leans in on wrestlers and really those characters that they're great for what they did and they influenced others. And I think their influence on others is probably why I put them in this Mount Rushmore. So the names that I've come up with are going to shock people because they're not going to be ones that I'm not going to be calling on Hulk Hogan. I'm not going to mention Steve Austin, and I'm not going to mention the Ultimate Warrior or Steve Austin, or like those as great, and no arguments here. My rationale is very different from what somebody else's is. So if you're prepared to go off the grid a little bit, my friend, let's take the
always,
trip.
Always. I'm two glasses deep now. Let's go. Let's go.
Okay. So the first one I was going to go with was Carl Gotch. Carl Gotch, for those that are familiar with him. Yeah, I'm really going way back. And it isn't somebody that clearly there's a lot of footage of, but to know how he is called the God of professional wrestling, has been quoted as that. His influence on those in Japan and how he trained those is remarkable. Not necessarily the easiest of guys to get along with, from what I'm told. He was a wrestler's wrestler. It was all about the illusion. It's all about, but he would easily stretch it too, right? So in seeing that, I'm just so fascinated in how he doesn't get as many prompts today as those that have looked at him and said, wow, he's such a great influence on so-and-so, and others have regarded him as such too, right? So Carl Gotch would have been one of my four. The next would have been Lee Robinson. And Robinson influenced, he was the trainer of trainers to people like, so Shayna Baszler had Josh Barnett, but then Josh Barnett learned from Robinson too. Fighter, scrappy, again, true shooter in its legitimate form. Almost wish that we could get a bit of a callback to that. And I think we see a little bit of that when we see MMA too, because those guys, that's living on today. Now, is he bankable? Is he probably not? Definitely not. But his influence to those that come after him is pretty profound. So the next one everybody would know, and at least in our generation would know, but I think I put up something on our Facebook page, and it's come into question because how do you value worth of somebody if you look at just title reigns? And people would say Ric Flair, but I'm going to go Terry Funk. And
Absolutely good shout.
Yeah, I think Terry Funk, where he was, when he was doing it, as long as he's done it, he's won championships. He's fought on indies. He's fought on smaller promotions. So for somebody to say that he wasn't valuable or doesn't even deserve to be in a top five or top 10, I will beg to differ. So he is... we lost him last year, but his influence, Cactus Jack or Tommy Dreamer, relationships. I mean, even if Ric Flair is saying that, maybe not this Ric Flair now, but Ric Flair a few years ago is saying that Terry Funk is, you know, if he's your favorite wrestler, that's got to say something about that. Yeah. So, and they were in wars together. Their feud. That just celebrated around the 35th anniversary of their fight in the NWA in Wrestle War, and how they battled and how Muda was a part of that and Sting was a part of that. It was just a glorious time. If anybody can look up that period, we definitely would recommend it. But yeah, Terry Funk. I mean, what he did in ECW, and I mean, in your 50s doing moonsaults, that's insane. Insane.
It's not even just that. He put the whole promotion on his back. This was a startup. Yeah. That you know, they needed someone, a name, to make them known, and he was like, "Okay, strap yourselves in, boys. We're going for a ride." And he bloody did. He's actually on mine. So I'm so happy you said that.
It's okay because there is no. I don't think there's going to be a wrong with anybody we call on because. We rationalize why we pick the names that we do. They mean something to us, right? Exactly. The last one is going to be a little more familiar. So I went off the grid with a couple with Robinson and Gotch for sure. Pulled it back in a little bit with somebody like Terry Funk, which is like, oh man, I bet you a lot of people wouldn't think of him because people will stick with their tried and true of saying Hogan, Austin, Flair, because that's what they know, or Undertaker. Like these are guys, but I mean, influence and what somebody means to others is important. And my last one is so hard for me to decide on because in different periods of my life, they meant so much and they served such an important purpose. So that fourth one almost has to be a three-headed rock, if possible. Or at least a two-headed rock, if possible, right? and I would put, you know, a Bret Hart. And I would split it with Ricky Steamboat because both were my favorites as kids. And they were my favorites because I believe them. Now, people will argue you're either a Bret fan or a Shawn fan. It doesn't matter. You're a wrestling fan. But what they meant to somebody, what they sold in front of you, how they convinced you. With Ricky Steamboat, when Randy Savage jumped off the top rope and double axe handled him, with his throat resting against the guardrail, oh my God, I thought his larynx was crushed. It was sold to the ninth degree. What does that say? I'm like, oh my God. And then you didn't see him. And then you believed it. So you take away social media and all those things. And I mean, as a wrestler, he was among the most convincing faces ever. So... yeah, it was a hard one. I don't know if my Mount Rushmore's. If you want to disqualify my fourth one,
no, no, No.
Mr. Blake,
no.
But...
No, there's no disqualifications. As you said, everyone has an opinion. Everyone's got... It's like an arsehole. Everyone's got one, right? So that's how the saying goes.
Yeah,
whether it's right or wrong, it doesn't matter. It's your opinion. So it's what counts to you. I've got...
Yeah.
I haven't put any thought into this at all until literally we started chatting, I'm going to say, about half an hour ago. So as we were talking, I'm sitting there, I was listening to you before we started recording, but I'm also thinking, who would I put in my Hall of Fame or my Mount Rushmore? Who would I put? And it's so bloody difficult. I don't think I could narrow it down. If I said to you before about having a mountain range of wrestlers, if I could do that, mm-hmm. I could be here all day. But you're right. It doesn't matter what anyone thinks or feels or says. It's your Mount Rushmore. It's yours. That's it. Screw them. Screw everyone.
And ask us this question tomorrow. Who's to say it's the same four?
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean we had more time to sit. We had more time to process it. It's not like we're writing a laminated list or anything. And that, it's, you know, oh no, I knocked you out of my top four. That's a Friends callback, right? For any of our Friends fans, Isabella Rossellini, you were there.
Yes. That's the one.
There you go. That's the one. But yeah. I mean, we don't know, but right now, if I had to, and I've given it some thought on an hour long drive, those are the ones. But yourself, it is hard to narrow it down to just four.
It's you've had a different kind of wrestling upbringing to myself, and I think many others of my age that live over here in the UK, because we never got access to the NWA or Smoky Mountain or any other promotion apart from maybe WCW. And even then, it was like WCW Saturday Night. It was really, really awful, really bad. Like late 80s kind of WCW. And then WWF. Well, there was no wrestling before that, apart from World of Sport, which
okay.
You had like your Big Daddies, your Giant Haystacks, your Kendo Nagasakis, me growing up. But as I've got older, and with the advent of tape trading, The late 90s, I think I was doing tape trading. You learnt about the ECWs, you learnt about Japanese, like WAR and promotions like that. And all of a sudden, how old was I? I was in the late 90s, I was about 20, 21. My mind exploded. It was like, oh my God, look at all this. It's not just central to, you know, WWF or WWE as it was at the time. And the NWA / WCW, there was a whole different world. So if you took me back to different parts of my life watching wrestling, my Mount Rushmore would change a million times over. It's whereas obviously you living over in North America, I'm going to hazard a guess and say you had a better and wider range of promotions to watch from.
Well, I think, ECW wasn't so readily available here until they went to TNN, which was the Nashville network, which became Spike TV, all those, it's incarnations of different names. We like to get it on that kind of nationwide anyways. So whenever they would appear on WWE television, those of us in Canada, unless we had some sort of means of accessing it, like tape trading, it wasn't readily available either. Low frequency channels, possibly. I not from where we were. So WCW and WD tended to control the airwaves at least, I want to say, in the 90s.
Yeah, for sure.
I will say in the 80s. So we had Maple Leaf Wrestling.
Yes.
We had Maple Leaf Wrestling, and we had the Montreal Syndicate, which... That used to be the Dino Bravo was there, and the Rougeaus used to be there, and Rick Martel used to be there, and terrible Ted Arcini. Like there, those were the guys that were part of that. Actually, who was it? He was the Tonga kid, or I guess Fatu.
No, yeah,
Tama.
Yeah.
He would team up with Dan. It was Dan Crawford, but in the WWE, he was Phil LaFon.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah. So they would, but in Montreal, so they would compete there. And then, that's what we would have access to on one. Crazy callback. The manager of Abdullah the Butcher at the time, his manager, the manager's niece used to be my boss, which is really funny when you like talk about degrees of separation. Like, that was your last name? Are you?
Abdullah the Butcher's niece was your boss at one time.
No. Let me try this again. Abdullah the Butcher's manager. Manager, Eddie the Brain Creechman.
Yeah.
His niece, so the manager's niece, used to be my boss. Yeah. It was like, oh, okay.
That's insane. Did she talk about, well, I don't suppose you'd been, was you close? Okay. A, was you close to the boss to talk about wrestling? B, did you bring up, so did you see Abby growing up? Did he always stick forks in his head and, you know, was it a party trick he did for you?
She spoke about how they felt, how their upbringing was. And honestly, Eddie lived the character outside of the ring on the streets.
Nice.
But if you're not privy to the business per se, and it's not something you like, ever have that feeling where your kids look at you and they're like, I'm so embarrassed.
Yeah, mine does that every single bloody day.
It was like that with her.
Yeah.
So that was the feeling. So it wasn't seen as favorably to anybody, but that was what he was known for. He was beloved for that or hated. Yeah. It was literally the brain, much like Bobby Heenan, right?
Kayfabe, brother. It's all about the kayfabe.
For sure. But yeah, like our exposure was different. But is there nobody from World of Sport, like Rollerball Rocco?
Rocco. Again, so if you lovely listeners out there would like to scroll through the archives of the Pro Wrestling Post, you'll see my first ever article, which details how I got into wrestling. And I used to watch World of Sport with my nan whilst she was knitting. I have no idea what she was knitting. There was never any end product of her knitting, but she was just sat in her armchair watching World of Sport on the TV, knitting. And she would knit one, purl one, and whatever else she was bloody doing with it. And then all of a sudden she would look up at the screen and she'll start shouting, total and utter upset. My nan had a potty mouth that a sailor would be proud of. She would shout so many obscenities at the screen, and I was just enamored with it. I think I was more enamored with my nan getting involved with what she was seeing on screen, which has therefore been passed down to me. So obviously you and I know that it's a physical ballet, isn't it? A match is a physical ballet. And there comes a point as you're growing up where you know that it's predetermined and scripted, whatever you want to call it, but you still lose yourself in that moment. So when my nan, bless her, she I remember once she threw her knitting needle at the TV, and this is the old style TVs, which were about 15 foot wide, you know, they were that bloody big because of the tube in the back. And she threw her knitting needle at the TV, and my granddad was like, you've got to pack that in, you're going to break the TV. And my nan is literally like, you want some? Come on, I'll take you outside, I'll suplex you. My nan at the time was in her 60s, and she's offering out my granddad and saying, I'm going to suplex you in the back garden. And it's because of her why I love wrestling. So at that time of World of Sport, it was, I mentioned earlier, you had the Big Daddy. You had Giant Haystacks, you had Kendo Nagasaki. Going back, as I've got older, you can obviously jump onto YouTube and whatever else. During the mid to late noughties over here, there used to be a satellite TV channel called The Wrestling Channel. It didn't last that long. It was only about 2 years. But they had TNA wrestling, old school TNA wrestling, and they had, what else now? I think there's some WXW on there, or something, some German wrestling. And then they had old school World of Sport. So then I started seeing people like Marty Jones, like Rollable Rocco, and Cat Weasel, and people like that. And again, so this is like 2005, so I'm like mid-20s, mid to late-20s, and again, my mind is blown. It's like, oh my God, I never knew this existed. So then I went down the deep hole and started watching as much old-school World of Sport I could. And it's on my Mount Rushmore, I suppose you could have a World of Sport member because he was there very, very young when he came over for a tour. I've got Bret Hart on there because he's the best there was, the best there is. And yeah, he's the best there ever will be. There's never, apart from Kurt Angle, been anyone technically as sound as him.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. Absolutely ever. Not only that, he can elicit reactions out of you at a drop of a hat. He can, whether it's love to anger or anything, that guy could do it. Okay, he left the biz and he's a grumpy, bitter old get off my lawn kind of old man, but it happens. At that time, in that period that he was top of the bloody world, he was the best. Unmatched, absolutely unmatched in my eyes. Again, opinions like ourselves, unmatched. Who else I've got on my list? So you mentioned him, Terry Funk. I was going to put Mick Foley because to me, Mick Foley is the greatest wrestler alive. Because if someone of his physique could do and achieve everything that guy has done, the sky's the limit for you, me, and Joe Bloggs down the road. Anyone can do whatever they want as long as they put their mind to it. He is the epitome of that. Yeah. So yes, I saw him. I was very, very ill. I think I had chicken pox.
Oh.
And I was, how old was I? I was about 9. And I was with my dad for the weekend. My mum and dad separated by this point. So I was with my dad and he basically quarantined me upstairs in the spare bedroom. But he brought in a portable TV and he said, right, watch this. And he found this late night WCW that I was talking about earlier. And Cactus Jack come out. And who was he facing? I think he was facing Vader in one of their epics on a Saturday night kind of show. But it was, this is really late night. This is like 2 o'clock in the morning. Because I couldn't sleep. And I was like whinging. So my dad's brought it in this TV. And I'm sitting there watching it and seeing Mick Foley / Cactus do what he does then blew my mind. This guy was heavy set, let's say. He lost his teeth. He's got half his ear missing. He's a complete and utter crazy wild man. And he captured my attention. And as I've got older, obviously, he migrated over to WWE, became Mankind, and you learn more and more about him with the sit-down interviews with JR. That guy, I would not have trained if it wasn't for him. And
wow,
I can't give him a better compliment than that. I mean, Bret Hart's the best there was, the wrestler's wrestler. Cactus Jack, whatever you want to call him, Mick Foley is my wrestler. He is the guy that I will go to bat for 100 times out of 100, and I don't care if I lost 100 out of 100. He's my wrestler. He's my inspiration. I have a little geek corner of my living room. I don't know about you listeners out there, but living rooms is normally like the wife's domain. I have, really? I'm going to say roughly about 8% of this living room where I've got a little corner. I've got geek stuff. So I've got Star Wars stuff, I've got Lego stuff, and I've got a limited edition WrestleMania. Is it WrestleMania 22? Yeah, it was. It was this match against Edge. Boxed figure, limited edition, one of 3,000, and I've got number 4. And wow. It is, I've never told you this, and I've never shown you this. Oh. Whatever. It is pride of play. It's smack bang in the middle of my little corner. And yeah, it's this podcast, writing, everything to do with wrestling that I've done is because of him. He's my number one. He's, if there is a number one on a Mount Rushmore, he is my number one. And then talking about NWA, WCW, whatever you want to call it, and ECW, I have Eddie Guerrero. For the plain and simple fact is that I'd never really seen Lucha until I started watching. Where did I see him first? I think I saw him first on WCW, and then through tape trading, I found him and Ray and Psychosis and Juventud all in ECW. But Eddie stood out once again because of who he is, or sorry, was. His personality, his charisma, everything that's been said before about him, that just hit me like a ton of bricks in the face. Like, wow, this guy is special. This guy is someone to watch. And going back, one of my favorite matches of all time is Halloween Havoc against Ray. It's just, there's no such thing as a perfect match, but damn, that's bloody close to me. Eddie, I don't mean to go on like I just did about Mick, but Eddie will always be an amazing, amazing influence on me and many others. And I'm just gushing again. And the fourth one, I haven't got a fourth one, because if I had a fourth one, my Mount Rushmore was kind of closed, and I've got literally 100 other wrestlers that I could, as you said in your explanation, you could talk to you tomorrow and it might change. I don't want to put a fourth one in, because I know in an hour's time it will change. I could put Bryan Danielson up there due to his Ring of Honor work, then obviously WWE, now in AEW. Who else have I put in it? You could put Ric Flair, his early Ric Flair, not drunken shouting at bartenders Ric Flair. Let's forget about that bit, but yeah, Ric Flair putting the NWA on his back. You know, we said about Terry Funk doing it. This the NWA. Ric Flair did it for how many years, and the feuds that he had with Terry and, you know, countless others. Unfortunately, even though I don't like the guy, you could put Hogan on there, because he did exactly the same thing for WWF. It's just so many. So I'm sticking on three, mainly because A, I can't think of another one that's strong enough to put on there, and B, I don't want to close it off.
Okay, well, I have to say one, because of listeners, I think they should know, one that I would recommend for Mr. Blake's podcast, Mr. Blake's Mount Rushmore, and it's the only time, and I can say this wholeheartedly, I sat next to this man with beer in hand, as any grown man being emotional over seeing wrestling can be, was overwhelmed with a sense of just, I can't believe I'm here and in this moment, seeing Edge's retirement. And I don't know how you cope now without mentioning.
That was insane. That was, we booked like SmackDown months before.
Yes, we did. We did.
We were just hoping just to go see a really good SmackDown. And then as time got closer, we found out that this could possibly be his last match. And it didn't really hit me until, you know this because you was there, you stood right next to me. Didn't hit me until after the match, when Sheamus gave him a hug and just powdered out of the ring. And you had Adam Copeland now, just stood in the ring amongst, about 16,000 Torontoites or whatever. I don't know what you call yourselves. And he's just soaking it all in. Absolutely. He's just looking around. He's soaking it in. He's not spoken for 5 minutes, and we're still giving him a standing ovation. That was a moment. And again, going back to my nan, you know, seeing her get annoyed and offering out my granddad, that was a moment. I'm going to All In this summer. I have friends that went to All In last year, and they just said the entire show was a moment. That's what wrestling is. Wrestling is about moments. It's not about the match. Okay, no, that came out wrong. It is about the matches. It is about the story. It is about, but it all goes together to make a moment. And that's, to me personally, that's what it means the most to me. And being in the Scotiabank with you, with my wife, with our kids, saying what we thought was goodbye, although deep down we knew he was going to AEW, but saying goodbye to him after a battering of a match, that was a moment. Standing in the queue waiting to get merch while some guy is talking to us about the Bloodline and trying to basically convert us to Bloodline fans for 20 sodding minutes is a moment I will never forget. Excuse me. How much did I pay? I think in UK terms, I think it was about £9 for a beer. It's a moment I'll never forget. But it's all interlaced with wrestling. And like I said, it all comes to one. It's all a moment. And at the end of the day, as we're getting older, that's what I think about a lot, is moments. I think about my training days. God, I sound really old, don't I? It's not that long ago, but when I used to train and the guys and the girls I used to train with and the moments that we shared in the ring, no one else knows what we all did and went through. It's just specifically us. And in like the Scotiabank, there were 16,000 of us that had that moment. 16,000 in like 8 billion people. That's such a small percentage, and we all shared that moment.
I looked over to my left, and as you sat there looking out, I'm looking at you looking out. So this is my vantage point. You've got you're facing your hands, and you're looking out to the crowd, leaning over, and there's this holy shit moment look on your face, like, wow, almost like you had to catch your breath. And I don't know how to describe that as somebody from the outside seeing that, but if I could have taken a picture and framed it and sent it home with you and your lovely wife and family, I would have, because it was among the most special things I've seen, being part of an environment where somebody loved it so wholeheartedly and could escape into a moment. And I'm so glad that you picked me to be there with you, mate.
Ah, you're welcome, mate. You're welcome. Look at us getting old and sentimental. I'll tell you another moment. I might have told you this before. Back over here, there's a tiny town called Chatham up the road from us.
And yeah, pretty Chatham.
A fair few years ago, actually, myself, Dan Conroy, Paul Woxenham, and my brother went to Chatham to watch a show, an IPW show. Young Bucks weren't there. I think it was just an ordinary show. Oh no, Zack Sabre Jr. was there. That's why. Oh, we was going to see Zack because Dan Conroy trained for a little while with Zack Sabre Jr. That's one of his major claims to fame. So we went there and we was watching matches and things. Now IPW was, they can be a bit hardcore wrestle like matches and things. My brother's now, he's not with us anymore. He passed away a fair few years ago, but this memory, when I think of my brother, it's always this memory. When we got there, myself, Dan and Paul had got some beers and we'd gone to sit down on like the sides and not bleachers as such, but they were like raised seating. My brother, who could not pull a woman, let alone catch a cold, all of a sudden he got the attention of this stunning, I'm going to say she was Swedish, woman. Absolutely stunning. he's overjoyed. He's like, right, screw you guys. I'm in here. I'm going to stay with her. I'm going to, okay, mate, you crack on. So he's about 20 foot to our left on the floor. We raised up. Now, this match was happening. And it's a hardcore match. And Joey, I think it was, who was it? I don't know who it was. But Zach was involved or someone. I don't know. Anyway, I'm getting confused. Basically, a chair got used. Now, the referee literally picked up this chair and threw it at the ring. And me, Dan and Paul, we were watching this chair in slow motion spin very, very slowly out of the ring. And it hit the ringside photographer flush on the head. He's gone down like the proverbial ton of crap. We are literally in hysterics. Beer is flying everywhere because we can't control ourselves. My brother, who's now taken his attention away from the stunning blonde, has turned around to look at the floor to see the photographer guy with basically a chair leg hanging out of his head and blood spurting like a fountain. My brother has gone deathly white and pretty much fainted. I had to go down to sort him out. And by the time he got back to his feet, the stunning blonde had gone off with some big butch bloke and everything else. And my brother was just like, oh my God, what have I done? But again, it's a wrestling moment that happens that just takes me to a happy place. Not obviously not for the photographer guy, but for me and Paul and Dan, and I hope they're listening. I hope they remember. But yeah, it's just like I said, wrestling gives moments, makes moments, I should say, and they're always stored in my brain, always. It's like, okay, you guys and girls at home, where were you? What were you doing when Taker lost at Mania? I guarantee you know, because it's a moment. You know? If things yeah. like that, a shared moment, you know exactly where you were. It's like the old saying, you know where you were when JFK was shot and things like that. You know exactly where you were when Taker lost. That's the power of wrestling. That's the yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we were still in disbelief when we saw him. Like, is that real? Did that just happen? Like, we're almost like, huh? There was just collective stun because I know we were at that point, we were still doing WrestleMania parties. We we were really gimmicky folks. Like, we went the whole nine yards, and kudos to my wife for doing this. We actually, so our WrestleMania parties had a card where you actually are having picks. Like, it's like a lottery card where you're making your picks of who's going to win. And there was a buy-in, not like the all-in buy-ins, where literally you're paying $5 for each of your tickets. And we put them into a WWF-themed lunchbox. And we suspended nice. it from the ceiling fan. So the winner, unclaimed, or and nobody had to fight them off. Once we knew that they were the winner, because we had a copy of everybody's cards, they would climb the step stool, not the ladder, the step stool, which is maybe three steps, and they would detach the yeah. And there was a belt there too, so they would take the title for a year, and yeah.
Oh,
but
man.
Yeah, so yeah, that was the year that, like, one of those years we were just total shock. Like, what? We can't believe it, and it happened.
We were myself and my wife. She used to like wrestling growing up. Then she grew up and kind of didn't follow it anymore. And then when she met me, she kind of reluctantly got back into it, and now she actually really likes it. So for WrestleMania 30, we were at my friend Paul's house. Again, WrestleMania party. It's like 1 a.m., isn't it? It starts over here. And we're all watching and everything else. And we're watching this match. And we're all saying, no, Taker's not going to lose. Of course he's not going to lose. He's going to retire undefeated at Mania. That's going to be his thing. And then when the pinfall happened, it was the strangest, eeriest feeling ever. I'm no kidding, there was about 15 people, including children, just deathly silent. We did not move. Our eyes were glued to the TV. And then about 10 seconds later, I don't know who said it, but 10 seconds later, someone went, that's bullshit. And then it was like the dam had broke, and we all just went, "What the hell just happened? What have we just witnessed? Oh my god! No, no, no!" Again, it's another moment, and fantastic. It's the power of wrestling. People don't understand. I rephrase that. My non-wrestling friends don't understand how I can get so passionate about choreographed physical ballet. So I say to them, do you watch soap operas? Do you watch movies? Do you watch TV shows? Of course we bloody do. I said, right. So when you're watching, let's say you watched Endgame, the Marvel film, and right at the very end, when you think all those the heroes have died, and then they came through the portals at the end, and you get that feeling of euphoria come over, you go, oh my god, this is amazing. Why should you feel like that? And then they shut up. So just because you like you get that feeling from a film, don't have a go at me or make me feel lesser than you, because I get that feeling not just from that film, but from TV shows, but from music and wrestling. And it, 9 times out of 10, it shuts them up. And then the 10th one, we used to chuck out the pub and bar them.
As a famous saying has been given to me, for some, no explanation is necessary, and for others, no explanation will do.
Yeah, totally. Totally agree.
Those that don't want to believe won't believe. So why?
Yeah.
Then why watch movies? Don't you watch movies to be entertained and to escape? And if those are your reasons for watching it, I'm pretty sure you're not looking for like a dissertation or of Spain or something hybrid that's gonna talk about. That's just a documentary. You don't go to a theater watch a documentary. I mean, you could, but that's not necessarily what you're doing it for, right? You do it to escape life's day-to-day issues and challenges that we have, and that's why we do these things. That's why we're on this podcast talking as in our escape.
Here's another moment. Here's another moment for it. This literally just popped into my head. I had an ex-girlfriend who literally... she detested wrestling. She put up with it for me, but she detested wrestling. So we were living together back in my tape trading days, and I can't remember which ECW event turned up, but an ECW event turned up through the post, and I lost my shit. I was like, oh my God, I've been waiting so long to watch this. Oh my God, get out of the way. I'm going to put it on that. And she's gone to me, what is it? And she literally gave me a 10-minute, lecture of how pathetic I was, how immature I was, and all this kind of, and as she's talking to me, I had the light bulb just flicker on in my head and go, yeah, I don't think you and Mia should be together anymore. And the very next day, I kicked her ass out. She was gone. See, wrestling will always win. It seriously always wins. Sorry, wrestling and Star Wars before my Jedi powers leave me. Yeah, wrestling and Star Wars. But just all these things. I don't know how the hell we've started talking about moments when we're talking about Mount Rushmore, but hey, we're at a bar. Who cares?
Hey, and that just happens in at the Pro Wrestling Post pub.
Call it Pro Wrestling Post Arms. I like the arms.
Yeah, you like the arms?
Yeah. Nice. it's very British, the arms. Yeah.
Pub. The arms? Okay. We can do that.
Yeah. I'll do
that.
Here
we have a lot of bar and grills.
Yeah, you do.
Or taverns. So I don't know if we want
to. When we went to the Loose Moose.
I don't even know. The Loose Moose.
When we went to the Loose Moose, when I was in Toronto, you guys and girls, we went to a bar called the Loose Moose with our mutual friend, Steve. Hi, Steve. How you doing? Hope you're all good. Need to catch up soon. He took us to the Loose Moose, and we've gone in, we've sat down, we started eating, and I am literally looking around thinking, this would good, a real good proper sports bar here. I could have like this corner could be like football/soccer. This part over here could be rugby, and we have all these different, I'm looking around thinking that could be the wrestling section because we're in Toronto. It's literally on the Scotiabank's doorstep as well. So yeah, you've got lots of bars over there.
Yeah.
Sorry, I don't know why I just mentioned that, but
No, but I think maybe a name that kind of is a hybrid of like something Britain based, something Ontario based, something in, maybe we can massage a name that will come out. But you know, again, another moment that we're kind of experiencing.
I'll tell you what, guys and girls, drop us some names. If you can think of a name for our metaphorical bar/pub, drop us a line on the socials. DM us if you want to keep it on the QT, or stick it on our walls and whatever else. Yeah, just any name. I was gonna say there's no wrong names, but there are. And then you never know. We might name our metaphorical bar after you. And when I get my butt back over to Canada and we have our drunk cast, that is where we're going to be, right there. That's where we're going to be. The name you guys named this bar, that's where we're going to be. I know it's 2 years away. Well, 18 months or whatever it is. But yeah, that's where we're going to be. Yeah. I like that.
So maybe also on socials, listeners can share who they would put on their Mount Rushmore. It's a pretty popular question. Yeah. Share with us who are your men or women? I mean, we talked about this a little bit on what our Mount Rushmore would be. And we talked about, is it going to just be tied to wrestlers, right? Who's to not say we don't come back in a few weeks and say, we want to revisit the Mount Rushmore question, but maybe we stick to maybe we look at something else wrestling based. But again, that's a conversation for another day.
We could do it now. I said to you before, are we going to do like a Mount Rushmore of managers/valets?
We
just put you on the spot. I mean, I've put myself on the spot because I can only think of one decent one, or two decent ones, actually. Thinking about it. Okay. Have you got one?
Okay. So, yeah, mine would, I guess, manager/valet, because I think, in fairness, it's kind of hard not to mention their place in history. And maybe fans might be more aware of, like, some more modern fans Paul Heyman, I think, is a fair one to say because of his place. And he's lasted far into a whole nother generation where others don't really remember others. I mean, if you're really looking at managers past,
go on. I'm telepathically sending you one name.
No. If you're looking past 2000, it's hard to come across really managers and valets. They're very few and far between, I would think. No.
Okay. In my eyes, the greatest manager and one of the greatest talkers of all time, Bobby Heenan.
Oh, without question. I am right there with you as being on that Mount Rushmore. But I think it becomes harder if people have to say, if you're a wingman, and my little girl ends up saying, like, if we were to say, who's your favorite managers? If you have to put four managers or people that come to the ring with, who would they say? Now, maybe not now because they're too young but maybe your wingman could probably compile a list. Could he go beyond?
That's his homework for the weekend. Thank you, sir.
There you go. But I think that becomes harder, right? But yeah, you're right. Like in Heenan and Heyman, I think, tend to be on a lot of people's. It's kind of hard not to, because they're selling their talent. They're the ones. Yeah. They're the mouthpiece for just that, right?
Exactly. That's the whole point. If you're a manager or a valet or whatever you want to call themselves, if you're an associate, you are there to put your client, wrestler, whatever, over. It's not you. If they get over, you get over by proxy. So you have to make them get over. And Bobby Heenan and Paul Heyman, wow. Again, what can we say that hasn't already been said? They are the best at what they do. And I don't think they're ever going to get topped.
No.
Just absolutely amazing.
But I would put a couple of valets to make it, to because yeah. their importance is also there. I would say Sensational Sherry.
Sherry, yes.
I mean, her WCW time, her WWF time, so valuable, so valuable. And the fourth one is tougher because I'm trying to think. I mean, I could say Jimmy Hart, but I mean, like, possibly. But then, so I mean, that fourth person is hard because I'm trying to decide. Like, I'm thinking, yeah, Jimmy Hart could be part of it. But then I think another female, and thinking Missy Hyatt from her time in WCW. But I don't know if it's as prevalent to like the Attitude Era. Like I just don't know if they're like. What do you think?
There's definitely a case to be made. You could put Sunny on that list, and that's gonna. I'm gonna completely look stupid now and go back on what I just said. But Sunny actually got bigger than the clients that she was looking after.
Yeah.
But she was a female valet in a time where there wasn't really a lot of female valets. Who else was there? You had Woman.
WCW times, ECW.
Yeah. You had Woman. Oh my words. Again, I mean,
There's a lot of like female valets in ECW that were like Francine or Beulah. Like they were all significant and they served. They were really strong, beautiful women, but they would battle. Like they would scrap, and those were important too, right? So I don't know. My Mount Rushmore. I don't know if I can find a fourth person to have as much longevity as you would want, at least on the spot. Like it's almost one of those, man, I need to go home and like I'm home, but I need to go back and really reflect on who that fourth person would be. I don't know, but yeah, you made a good case for Sunny, right? So
yeah, like I said, I've made myself look like a right idiot by going back on what I said, but she put so many people under her wing and made them prominent because of her. So it was a kind of a role reversal. Whereas before it was the clients got the manager over, she's actually getting them over without even them setting foot in the ring in some places. Smoking Guns, I mean, they were floundering and you know.
And they have her and they're a whole different look to them.
Yeah. I mean, Daddy Ass's career would be a totally different path if that didn't happen.
One name I wonder about, because I wonder if he had like sustained a regular enough time, because he's super articulate. He definitely has a look to him as a manager. Father James Mitchell. I wonder
That's a shout.
Yeah, because I wonder from his time in WCW, like as part of that old unholy alliance with Whipwreck and Tajiri, and then he's had years in TNA, but then he's also been in the NWA. It's just the time has been so broken up, whereas it feels like we've had Heyman for so long, and even though the client changes, he's still pretty prominent, right?
I think you could tar Heyman with the same brush, because Father James Mitchell turned up, did his thing, left. Came back after a while, did his thing, left. Paul Heyman did exactly the same thing. He even left the business to do a... I don't know what he did. What was his thing? It's like an agency, some kind of sports agency or something along those lines.
Okay.
And then came back when Brock came back. You can kind of tar them with the same brush. Obviously, with the WWE spotlight, Paul's going to be a lot more magnified. But Father James Mitchell, definitely a whole body of work there.
Pretty interesting stuff, yeah. What about you?
I'm still thinking. I'm literally still thinking.
Yeah, it's okay. I think two kind of wrote themselves, right? Is that what yeah. we're both in the same? So it's the latter two. So I guess you're Heenan and Heyman are two of your four.
Yeah, Heenan 0.5 ahead of Heyman, just because I feel like if Heenan wasn't around, I don't think Heyman could have been Heyman in that regard. Heenan broke barriers and then Paul came up behind and smashed them. But there I'm not too sure if... Sorry?
No, you're saying you're not too sure if...
Yeah, I'm not too sure if he could have broken them if it wasn't for Bobby. Again, I could be completely wrong, but it's my arsehole, sorry, opinion. So, you know, it's, yeah, I just a smidge in front. And to be perfectly honest, I always loved Bobby's little catty remarks and his put downs and his commentary sometimes was just fantastic.
Some of his quips almost as a commentator overshadow, but they stand out more than when he was a manager. Like, I mean, anybody that has seen the whole barbershop, when Shawn Michaels turns on Marty Jannetty, and then Shawn. So if anybody's not seen this, Mr. Blake knows what I'm referring to. There's a moment where Shawn Michaels throws Marty Jannetty into the glass window, and Bobby Heenan calls him a coward for trying to jump. He's trying to jump through the window. So, but those are things that as a kid were lost on me. I'm like, well, but he's not a, like, him and, oh, okay. Well, I was going to think of another person when it comes to commentary, but that's for another time. But he really served so much, right? He really did so much.
Yeah. I'm a huge Bobby fan. I wish there was on the network some kind of tab where you could have like just like a Bobby Heenan tab and a Paul Heyman tab, and underneath of these tabs would be different events that they were involved in, and because trying to go back and look at things is very difficult on the network.
So since we've okay, but who is your you still have this uneven number. Yeah. Do you have two to bounce up?
I'm going to be different.
Go for it. Love it.
So, yeah, one and two. Number three, the valet. It's hard, very, very hard to bet against Sherry because she was my first proper wrestling crush, Sherry.
Mm.
Yeah, she was until she started screaming and did that screech, and then it was like, ouch, my ears. Not good.
Yeah.
But yeah, she was my first proper wrestling crush. I'm gonna do exactly the same. My first one, I'm gonna stick at three because
if I
do the four, I've closed it, and then it's not laminated as you said, but it feels like that. So yeah, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Again, guys and girls, talk to us. Just any, just let us know. We are here to involve you guys. You talk, we listen, and we try and involve you into the pod. Again, it doesn't even have to be what we've spoken about. It could be your Mount Rushmore of finishing moves, or I'm gonna stop saying Mount Rushmore, mainly because I'm four drinks in now and my lips are starting to get a little bit rubbery.
You know what I find interesting? We're calling this the Mount Rushmore, but neither one of us are American. So I really find that, why are we giving so many props?
America!
America!
We got the Hall of Fame. You could call it the Hall of Fame. You could call it, I don't know. But yeah, your top five or four, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, like I said, it could be your finishing moves. Could be your favorite events, WrestleManias, whatever, you know, it could be anything you want it to be. Let's make it, people, let's make some moments. This is not me drunk. I'm going to admit, I haven't had a lot to eat today. Before I started to record, I had a bowl of couscous that my lovely son had made. And I've had four rather large mint choc chip Baileys. I will get this sponsorship. Trust me. And when I do, I'm sending some bottles your way, mate.
Thank you.
And I'm getting a nice little buzz. So, yeah, just let's make moments. Talk to us. And, yeah, we will carry on the conversation via the medium of the podcast. Well, have you got anything else there? Is there anything else I just said there just pop out to you? Or
okay, so this one could be, I thought about it. Let's go, because we're using the Mount Rushmore, let's kind of stick to that whole motif. But commentators.
Knew you were going to do that.
I had to wait till you were at least four or five drinks in. Because now I'm going to spin the stool that you're sitting on, potentially make you dizzy. And
I have dabbled in commentary. Okay. And I didn't know how difficult it is. I mean, I knew, I'm not an idiot, I knew it was going to be difficult. But as you yourself have probably noticed, I do repeat a lot of the words that I say over the course of this pod. When I'm doing the editing, I catch myself saying "so" a lot to start a new sentence and things like that. So when I'm doing commentary, or when I used to do commentary, I should say, it's very difficult to concentrate on what I'm saying, not saying certain words, and calling what I'm seeing. It is an art form to itself. And I have nothing but the utmost respect for anyone that's ever done it. Because it is not easy, folks. Really isn't easy. With that in mind, I don't think I can do commentators. I can do pairings. Because you need the colour, to me, again, opinion, you need a colour commentator and you need a play-by-play. Because one person, as I found, doing both jobs is so difficult. Really is. And my number one pairing, again, I've already said his name already, is Bobby and Gorilla.
Yep.
That's the simple fact, is that growing up over here in the UK, watching Shotgun and Wrestling Challenge and all the other syndicated versions of the show that we used to get over here on a Sunday morning, they were the team. I think we just missed Jesse Ventura. I think he'd left, and I think Bobby stepped up.
And Jesse was really good too. So
he was really good. He had that bass in his voice. He spoke like a wrestler who knew what he was talking about. But with Bobby and Gorilla, obviously Gorilla being an ex-wrestler, which I didn't know at the time. I didn't know he was a famous champion, let alone a bloody wrestler. Him talking about taking shots to the breadbasket, which to this day I still use. with Bobby and the silliness between the two, and Gorilla going, "Oh, will you?" You know, just to shut him up and calm him. Oh, absolutely perfect. I could listen to them all day, every day. They are the number one for me. What about you?
Oh, I mean, they are definitely there. I mean, you could, like, gorilla-isms from, he doesn't know a wrist lock from a wristwatch. Or, you know, "You're a fountain of misinformation," or "Will you stop?" I mean,
"Will you stop?" Yeah. Yeah.
It just goes on. There are just things that he is, you know, the irresistible force versus the immovable object. So, and it's funny, your favorite wrestler was known that, right? Wasn't Nia Jax known as the... Sorry. See, now, I can say this miles and miles away without fear of harm.
We had this discussion, right? There was going to be certain people that weren't going to be mentioned because before you say anything, because I will go off on a tangent and then I'll get told off again. So So yeah, that's wrong on you, wrong.
And I took advantage of your state, so you know.
My slight inebriation, yeah.
Exactly, but friends, share with friends, no?
That's all right.
But yeah, I mean, the gorilla-isms that he was just so known for, we just made him so beloved. And the legitimate friendship that those two, on screen, there was that banter, but behind the scenes, they just, to know that they loved each other, that when the moment when Gorilla actually throws Bobby Heenan out as like his exit, cameras go off and the two of them went back to the hotel and just bawled. They were crying because it was an end of a time.
It was absolutely perfect. Again, I might be seeing things through rose-tinted glasses being so young, but it was my first. I mean, I'd been watching wrestling at that point, and over here it was World of Sport, and it was very straight-laced. I'm going to call the action in the ring. I'm going to ignore any kind of semblance of a storyline. I'm just going to call these holds, these moves, these pinfalls. To hearing two guys who, even though they were pretend bitching to each other through a match, you could hear love, undying love for the pair of them, and yeah, just brilliant. And then obviously you go to JR and Jerry Lawler, which a lot of people will probably scream at me again, they should be number one, but I couldn't get on with Jerry Lawler. He as a foil to Jim Ross, he's up there with Bobby and Gorilla. But some of the crap he was coming out with, even at the time, he's talking about puppies, and even at the time I'm at home watching it going, "Ooh, really?" I know his attitude era and, you know, pushing the envelope, but that was...
Okay, now, attitude era, we can say that that was happening during the Monday Night Wars, and you weren't hearing that because... Wasn't Bobby doing commentary in WCW around that time anyways? I mean, you wouldn't hear.
He jumped ship.
Now, do you think Bobby... I don't want to ever disparage or discredit anything, but do you think some of that chemistry that he had couldn't really be replicated with Tony Schiavone or, I guess, Eric Bischoff at one point, or just whomever, like, because it was a three-man team, right?
I get the impression. I get the impression that Eric thought he was getting the Bobby from WWF, but Bobby then went on record many, many times and said the moment he walked in the door, he knew this was a different kind of company. It didn't know its arse from its elbow, and he was just there for a paycheck by that point. He may have been friendly.
Was he there to the end?
I can't remember. I'm sure I read somewhere that he sat at home watching the final Nitro.
Because then Mike Tenay is part of it at one point, and then Mike Tenay was there.
Yeah.
There's Scott. I forgot his name.
Scott Hudson.
That's it. Yeah, he was. So I'm guessing. Yeah, probably with all those other names mentioned towards the end. Yeah. So if he was watching at home, he was gone before then.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he was sat at home just waiting for his contract to go. And sad end. He should have been there. Really should. But yeah, you go back to like JR. JR, I might get shot for this. I think if it wasn't for Stone Cold Steve Austin, JR wouldn't be so loved. Because he made Steve with the calls that he did. But in turn, Steve made JR by giving him the opportunity to do those calls. But I think Steve would have got over without JR. Like I said, I'm going to get shot for that.
But hey, it's based off of a number of events that seem to be all linked together. It's kind of hard to ignore those things. Does this happen if this doesn't happen?
Yeah.
You know, does this... You know, I mean, the same could be said about the reason Stone Cold came back was because of JR, right?
Mm-hmm, that's true.
Had that falling out, right? So
yeah, he took his ball, went home.
While we definitely show our love for Gorilla and Bobby and JR and to some extent Jerry Lawler, they're guys that did a really wonderful job. That, like I said, some of my upbringing, I really had a chance to listen to and how they called action. It was a little different because of what we were exposed to, and maybe the way wrestling commentaries changed more so now than it was. But like, I had a chance to listen to Gordon Solie when I was younger, and not and Bob Caudle, and those two were part of NWA at a point, and there was a very much a Southern twang, and they focused on the action and they focused on the characters. But things were like Gordon Solie would say some pretty funny things. Like, even though he's doing an interview or something, he's like, "Oh, so you're a 2-time champ, which means you also lost 2 times. Back to you." Like, he doesn't give the guy that he's ribbing, which is the heel, not unlike a Gene Okerlund, right? Like a Mean Gene. But and he just leaves them there with their balls in their hand, kind of like, what do I say to that? Because you don't get a chance to respond. But he was really good at what he did. A lot of people will put him up there, especially if they've heard him talk, right? Joey Styles was really, really good DCW.
Oh, I'm so glad you said Joey.
As his like only one man commentary, yeah. He really was. I mean, I think Don Callis was in and out doing some stuff, and maybe Bill Alfonso. Like, I think they popped in and out, but it was like the Joey Styles show, and anybody else was kind of interchangeable.
Which is why I said at the beginning of this little section bit here that commentating by yourself is so damn difficult, and Joey made it look like an absolute goddamn dream. He was so good. And he was a lot more than, oh my God. He was so much more than that. So
he
much
really
more.
Was.
Oh, underrated.
And he held multiple roles. He held roles too. Like, he was doing interviews in the ring along with doing commentary up above the booth, right? So he really was a jack of all trades kind of thing. So
I mean, if you worked for ECW, you had to have about 7 different jobs anyway. So, you know, God, he shouldn't be any different.
yeah. Then how do you get your worth, right?
Yeah.
In more modern years, like if you look at TNA and they had guys like Mike Tenay and Don West that were part of it.
I have a question. Sure. Why does or did Don West get so much hate for his commentary? I thought he was bloody brilliant.
I'm hoping he's not martyred, where it's one of those, now that he's not here, that people can really appreciate him. I'm sure you appreciated him before, but I think I don't know. I really wish I understood. I think maybe part of the joke was because he was always trying to be the salesman and sell stuff, which is really
But then that's what they do. That's what you're supposed to do when you're a commentator. You sell what you see on the screen.
Yeah.
Is it because he was a used car?
Maybe. But he was legitimately selling. But he was legitimate.
Exactly. I always loved watching TNA. We used to get, going back to what I said earlier about the wrestling channel, we used to get the TNA pay-per-views for free. A couple of days later with adverts, but we used to get them for free. And watching him lose his mind over Elix Skipper doing that cage walk to, you know, Hurricane Rana, it's a thing of beauty. And he was like that all the time. He was the everyman off the street who basically said, here's a mic, what I want you to do is what you see in that ring, I want you to get excited and tell everyone all about it. Or if it's crap, you tell everyone all about it. Whatever it is you're feeling, you tell everyone all about it. And he did. And he got panned so much. He was so good. So good.
He really was.
Mike Tenay, he did a good job there. Not going to lie, he did a good job. Who else?
Not so much a fan of Joe of Matthews.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Joey Matthews, but it's not Joey Matthews. Josh Matthews.
He's, right, how can I put this? I think, I'll just kick something. I think that because he spent a lot of his formative youth under the WWE wing, he's learned commentary a particular way.
Yeah.
And it's stuck with him, if that makes any sense to you lot out there.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's, I mean, he's fine. He's like middle of the road. He does a good job. He doesn't do anything spectacular. He doesn't do anything bad. He's just like meh, which isn't great, but, you know, he does a good job. I'll tell you someone who I do like, who has got better since I first started listening to him, is Excalibur. I used to watch PWG, and he used to do the commentary of PWG, and he was very rushed, I think is the word. He was trying to do too much or say too much, and he was given the main announcing job at AEW, and he's found his style now, and I really like it. Really like it. Have you watched? No, not have you watched. So over here, I watch AEW through Fight TV, or it's called Triller TV now. And when it goes to break in America, it goes to picture in picture. But over here, it stays as it is, and we watch the action, and you hear them calling the action, but have been a lot more relaxed because they know they're not on the air. And the interaction between Taz and Excalibur is absolutely hilarious. There's just, they literally just sound like two, like we are right now, two buds just having a laugh and a joke whilst calling a match. And I like that. They need to do that more often, I think.
And unfortunately, I wish we would catch that in North America, because we're getting picture in picture. And so we don't hear any of that. We see this massive ad that takes up three quarters of the screen, and the picture in picture has one little excerpt of what's happening in the ring, where if you're not watching closely, you'll miss what's happening. Not a fan of picture in picture for sure. So we miss all of that. Unfortunately, I wish I could share in some of that so I could hear it too.
I might have to give you my login details. So you can watch, you can just watch Dynamite or for the adverts, you know, for the breaks.
Yeah.
Just hear the commentary.
That's it.
Random.
That's it.
Bit random, but there we go. I think it's coming up to the final call, don't you?
I think so too. I think we kind of, who knew that the Mount Rushmore could fill our days, our nights, and our glasses, because four drinks in, and we've covered commentators, we've covered valets and managers, yeah. We've covered wrestlers.
I don't think we covered anything really. We sort of glossed over it and just
yeah, I think so.
Just went on tangents, which, to be fair, is what you do at the pub, at the bar. You start talking about something, and then you takes a different direction, and you might come back from that, or you might take another direction. It is what it is. I hope you've enjoyed it, mate, because I certainly have, and I hope that the listeners have enjoyed it. It's not going to be like this all the time. There will be times where we will go back to having a run sheet and discussing major news items or pay-per-views or things like that. And then there may be some times where me and Mark just throw the run sheet in the air and go, do you know what? Sod it. Let's just have a metaphorical beer and just have a chat.
But this was a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
I thoroughly Great enjoyed call. Myself. Thoroughly enjoyed me myself.
Too. Me too.
What I might do is if I give the listeners like 24 hours heads up before we record one of these special episodes and just say, look, what should I drink today? And then they can choose what I will drink during the record, because I'm now five deep, and I'm ever so slightly tipsy. So I'm doing the edit of this in about half an hour. So that's going to be fun.
No, why don't you just sleep it off? And just, you said you're going to do it tomorrow. So do it tomorrow.
No. I'm going to do it now. I can drink more and do it. Oh
my God. Just it's Mother's Day weekend, so it might be harder for me.
Yes, yeah, we've have we had Mother's Day yet? I don't know if we had Mother's Day. I think we've had
They're
Mother's
all
Day.
A blur.
Over
here. I think
I can't, you know what? I can't remember. I think we have. I think Father's Day is next over here, but I don't know. It's actually my dad's birthday Sunday, so
nice.
I'm gonna try and have a video call with him, which would probably be me looking at his chin or something because he can't aim the camera at his bloody face, a silly sod. But yeah, that's my weekend. But yeah, again, just you lot out there, if you like this, let us know. If you didn't like it, let us know. Again,
yeah,
it's your. There are no wrong opinions, all right? This is what I'm trying to get across to you. There are moments in wrestling, is number one. And number two is that there are no wrong opinions. So let us know. Talk to us. What you like, what you didn't like, what you would like to see from us, or sorry, hear from us in the future. Let us know.
If you tell Mr. Blake what he'd like to drink alcoholic-wise, what adult beverage he'd like, maybe you can offer a suggestion of what non-alcoholic, because of when this is being recorded. I'll jump in on that too.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that's cool. Talking of which, I'm vetoing tequila. I don't like tequila, and B, I want to get up and kind of mosh when I drink tequila. So let's not have tequila on the menu.
Remember, they can suggest it, whatever tickles your fancy that moment is really what you're going with. So all are welcome, not all are chosen. So
dude, I used to work and run pubs. I like all alcohol. That's that's just a given. Right, let's mosey on out of here before we get barred. Where can people get hold of you if they want to tell you what non-alcoholic drink you should be drinking?
They could reach me on one of our two Twitter X's profiles. You can reach us on the Pro Wrestling Post one, at Pro Wrestling Post PST. You can reach us there, or at The Mark Madison, and tweet us there. Tweet me there with your suggestions of potentially what to drink, or what you thought, or your different Mount Rushmores. We'd definitely love to hear it. Instagram would be at Pro Wrestling Post, or even follow us on Facebook, Facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Post. Reach us there.
Fantastic. Myself, you can catch me on Twitter at TheMarkBlake, or one word. And on the Instagram, it's The_Mark_Blake. Honestly, I'm not saying this because I'm five deep. I am looking forward to hearing from you all. We will be back very soon with another episode of the Pro Wrestling Post. We don't even know what kind of episode it's going to be. It's going to be a mystery. Let's see where it takes us. So until then, thank you very much for listening. Thank you again, Mark. And I hope to hear from you and see you all very, very soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.